Well, no, I'm delighted to be talking to Oliver Hughes here in the graveyard in Ballehi. And of course, Ballehi, a great GAA club up here in Derry, won the All-Ireland Championship a number of years ago. First of all, Oliver, you're very welcome to the programme.
And you're very welcome to St Mary's Graveyard here in Ballehi.
And as I mentioned, you're former All-Ireland champions.
Oh, 1972, we were the All-Ireland club champions, beat University College Cork. A big victory. A great victory, and we haven't won it since, but we have been in All-Ireland final since, but hopefully someday we'll win another one.
When you say you have been in All-Ireland final since, how many have you been in?
I think it was two more.
Yeah.
Kilmacruds was one of them. Our team hasn't been playing as well as they had over the years because a lot of our members, good players, passed on and retired, and we have a new generation coming through now. But it could be 3 or 4 years, but hopefully we'll be back in Croke Park again.
Now, give us an idea about the size of Ballehi, because it's not a huge place, and it's would I consider it a village? Because you've been so successful, you must be an example for many more clubs.
Yes, well, it numbers about 1,800 families, and it would be relatively in size with other parishes within the Derry Diocese. We have been very, very fortunate that we were so successful on the field of play. And the fact that we were successful encouraged a lot of people who perhaps normally wouldn't have been followers of GAA to join our club and play for our team. A great club. Certainly, when you mentioned Kerry, we look to Kerry and we look up to Kerry as one of the greatest playing counties in Ireland. And we always love when Kerry's in an All-Ireland final to watch how football should be played. Great example to Gaelic football.
Now, Oliver, correct me now if I'm wrong, but I would reckon that the Ballehi GAA club, the Wolftones club,
the Wolftones club,
would have had one of the most tragic episodes and one of the most tragic pasts in relation to the troubles, as we call them, up here in the north, and probably one of the biggest tragic passes that of any club in the country, because your chairman was murdered and there was other men in the club who died through hunger strike, and we'll be talking about those. Talk to us about all of that. And am I exaggerating when I say that your history is one of the most troubled of all?
Well, any death is tragic to any family and indeed to community, but whenever you have death by murder, and our chairman, Sean Brown, was murdered in 1997 when he was locking up the gates after our usual Monday night meeting. It was one of the awfulest tragedies to happen. The people of this parish, the people of this county, indeed the GAA community right across Ireland. This was a man who gave his life, his time to the Gaelic Athletic Association. He was a family man, a modest man, a community man, who didn't have any political ambitions or aspirations as such. He just went on with his work. And his death stunned us completely. It was a difficult time. It was difficult to get over it. Growing up men stand not able to say a word whenever they got news of this here. Tears in their eyes. You would have had have known Sean Brown to recognise and know the character of the man. A very, very, very decent, respectable man. Thankfully, our club has moved on, but still the memory of Sean Brown still lives with us all. We will never, ever forget that man. Indeed, there were 7 members of our club who have died during the war, including my own brother and first cousin who died in hunger strike. So our GAA club in Ballehi has carried the cross and the burden of pain endured throughout the 30-year war.
Now, we're standing at the graveside of your brother and your cousin here who died in that hunger strike. Both of them played with your club. Yes. And it must have been an awful traumatic time. How traumatic was the whole thing for you and for your family, indeed for the DGA family in its entirety?
Well, it was difficult because death in itself is a tragedy. But when you have a young man, a very healthy young man, starving himself to death, making a protest, it's difficult probably for some people to understand how a man can have the strength and the courage to go through such a difficult task. It was also sad for me. I was the spokesperson for the families, and I could have asked the doctors, the medical people, to administer help to these people in hunger strike, to, you know, get them to take food. But I had to respect the wishes of my brother and my cousin and other people who said, you must not interfere with their protest. We want a day. We want a day that others might live. It was heartbreaking, and 30 years ago now is the anniversary of my brother's death. And every day I think of him, I have tears in my eyes when I think of the times we spent together and as a family and in the community. You have people there who are very, very upset and sad about the whole tragedy. It has been a difficult time for our parish, for our club. We have all been hurt and we are all in pain. But thankfully we're living in times now which are certainly different and hopefully will continue.
And Oliver, there are other people buried here that who died during those so-called troubles.
Yes.
And there were also members and playing members of your club here in Ballaghy.
Oh, aye. Well, we had the first man today was Colm McCartney, who died coming from a football match. He was murdered in Newton Hamilton 33 years ago. Him and another fella, Sean Farmer from the Moy in County Tyrone, was taken up a byroad and murdered by the UDR. A terrible, terrible tragedy. We had McGlinchey's, Dominic and his wife, murdered in Dundalk and Monaghan. And we had Willie Strathern, who was a playing member of our club, who had a business in another area and was murdered. So we know all about tragedy and pain and death, and we wouldn't wish it on any family, I can assure you.
I find the whole thing very hard to get to grasp and get my head around it in relation to the GAA and all these dates. How important, Oliver, was the GAA and was your club through all of this? And was it because these were all GAA men?
Well, someone asked me once about the relationship with the church and the GAA, and I said the church looked after our spiritual needs and the GAA looked after our sporting and culture needs. We don't have anything else. We have our families, and then we have the GAA, and I don't know which comes first. Someone said in Kerry, the GAA come before the church. It's probably the same here whenever it gets to the stage where you're in a county final, that you would miss Mass rather than miss the game. But there is nothing else for the nationalist people here. We have been discriminated against, not unlike other communities. The Loyalist Protestant Unionist communities had all the social facilities. We didn't have any of that there. And we had to make our own entertainment, and no better organisation to create that opportunity than the GAA. Every member of our parish here supports the GAA, and whilst they didn't all make it on the grade in the football field, they certainly are very supportive. The GAA has been a great organisation, a wonderful organisation, and we're very, very proud to have a club like Ballaghy, and indeed we're very proud of all the clubs in the surrounding areas. So if we hadn't the GAA here, life wouldn't be the same.
How difficult was it through all that traumatic, terrible times to keep the club going in relation to lads going training, going to matches and yeah, being harassed and roadblocks and British soldiers all over the place and helicopters? How difficult was that whole thing? And do you think that we don't appreciate what you went through down in the south as much as what we should, Oliver?
Well, as I said earlier, 56 members of our club were in prison. The majority of those members were interned without charge or trial, with no release date. And these were all people who had been playing members of the various teams, reserve and seniors. Also, our premises in Ballaghy were burnt to the ground twice. So going to football matches was a nightmare. A journey which would have lasted half an hour, you would have had to leave maybe 2.5 hours because of the possibility of roadblocks along the road. And you were held up, you were searched, your car was searched, you were maybe taken to the barracks if you weren't cooperating with you. bad, bad, difficult times. Unreal. The brutality of the security forces levelled against the GAA members was unreal. The GAA members represented a cultural organisation, and it seemed to be part of a problem for a lot of personnel within the security forces, particularly the UDR and the RUC. So we did suffer, and all clubs suffered, not alone here, but all over the six counties. Difficult, bad times for them.
You yourself were interned for 2 years?
Yes, I was interned, and I probably would have been kept longer, only a new Secretary of State came in, Willie Whitelaw, and released everybody to begin a new chapter, if you like. But it wasn't long till the arrest was taking place again when it didn't work out for them. Oh no, there's every family here has experienced some difficulty with the Troubles, whether it's death or a relation who has been in prison. There's nobody has escaped. But thankfully, we're a very proud people, we're a risen people, we're off our knees, we're out of the trenches. No longer do we have to look over our shoulders. We can hold our head high.
What's it like now for you, Oliver, to be a brother of one of the hunger strikers? What does life mean for you now? What has it meant for you since your brother died?
Well, my brother is certainly going to be written about in the history books of Ireland as probably one man who helped to bring about change. There was no more singular event in the history of the past 30 years that turned things probably better for nationalism than the hunger strike. All the wars that were being fought could have continued on indefinitely. It didn't seem to have the end result, but the hunger strikes was one time that brought about the unity of all the nationalist people. It was a very emotional time. How this affects me today, there's not a day goes by, but I think about my brother, and I think about the great memories we had together as children, growing up together. We were reared on a small farm, and my father only died there last year, 101 years of age. And it was very sore on my parents. Probably we had difficulty understanding why someone had to give his life through hunger strike. But that was a protest that the Irish people are familiar with, particularly the Republican people in the South who have experienced that. And I, you know, ask myself the question, will anybody else have to do what these people done? I certainly hope they don't.
How important is it, finally, to keep the story in fresh in today's world in relation to the likes of me coming here, standing at your brother's graveside and talking to you about the history of the GA Club and the history of what happened here? How important is all of this in today's world now, Oliver?
Well, I find a lot of young people today are very anxious to know about the hunger strikers, to know about what happened over the past 30 years, how this affected our GAA club. And there is groups of people there who do courses and educating the young people on what happened. They don't have any political agenda. It's just more or less as a form of education. There is books being written, and there's going to be documentaries done on the hunger strike and how it affected our GAA club. But, you know, we have very, very good people within our community here who take the time to tell what it was like 30 years ago.
Was there any time during his hunger strike that he was inclined to give it up? Was he? Describe your brother to us. Give us an idea. Because this man that could die like that must have something that no other person or very few other people have in their makeup and in their courage. It's difficult to get your head around it.
Well, first of all, he was a member of the Irish Republican Army. He had been on active service duty for a number of years. And talking to people now who would have kept him when he was on the run have described him as a very, very gentle person, a very kind person, a religious person, someone you could trust and respect. As a brother, I was very fond of him. He was probably different from the rest of the boys in our house. One example being, he would have washed the dishes and washed floors, something that I would never have done. no matter how much my mother pleaded, but he was a very good person. And I think, you know, the fact that a person gives sacrifices his life through hunger strike, you cannot say that as a selfish person. That person believes in himself, believe in what he's doing. And, I mean, he was not going to be the beneficiary of death through hunger strike. But the people who he represented, who he fought and eventually died for, would be the beneficiaries of the hunger strike. And I believe there was no other singular event that changed as much as the hunger strike.
And your brother and your cousin, both of them are buried here. Was that a conscious decision to bury both of them together? And how long did their hunger strikes last, and what ages were they?
Well, my brother died, was in hunger strike, 59 days. And my cousin was 62 days. Francis was 25 and Thomas was 23. And Thomas, my cousin, it was his request that he be buried beside Francis. So it wasn't difficult to arrange that. That was we had expected that to be that way.
Well, listen, Oliver, thank you for talking to me. And I suppose it's only right and it's only great to keep remembering these people and keeping them foremost in our mind, because they gave their lives for us and for everybody else. And it was a pleasure talking to you, and it was a great honour.
Thank you very much. Thank you.